We've been making the round in the livestock markets. We covered cattle at the end of last week, hogs yesterday, and today we're going to take a look at what's happening in dairy. And don't worry, we'll cover the grains. Heck, we'll cover any market you want us to talk about for that matter. Just give us a call.
Live from scattered makeshift command centers via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we feature a conversation with Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy. And right after the news, Oliver Slope from Blue Line Futures checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now here's the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis Michelson, thank you so much, my brother. How are you doing today?
Hello! Oh, super fantastic, man.
Good.
Super great. Super
good,
great.
Good, good. You know,
really good.
Like I said in the open, we've been making the rounds in the livestock market. Last week we had Scott Varlick from Coima Varlick on talking about what's happening in the cattle market. We've also in the morning we talked with Brett Crosby about the damage that's already been done to the hog industry or to the cattle industry, excuse me. Yesterday, we talked with Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University about the damage that's been done and so on.
Yep.
You know, and because the milk dumping caught so much attention, the major media has been doing, they've been talking about how much financial damage has been done to the market.
Uh-huh.
So instead of going down that path, we're going to talk some about that with Alyssa Badger, but I want to talk more about, my gosh, what can these guys do? What's going to be the light at the end of the tunnel that suggests that maybe we're starting to climb up out of this hole that we've gotten into with milk prices? So it's a little bit of a different approach than what we've been doing on the other ones, but you guys know Alyssa. She's so good with the markets and the global markets and the flow of dairy product around, not just around the country, but around the world. So, getting an update from Alyssa, I think is pretty important right now. And everybody at High Ground, they do a great job there. But get an update from Alyssa and really try to figure out where and when we might anticipate some kind of a recovery.
Okay. I think that sounds prudent.
Excellent. Excellent. Should we get to what was moving the markets around?
Well, Chip, I can tell you wheat export sales in the weekend at April 16 totaled 400,000 metric tons with 245,000 for delivery in the current marketing year and 155,000 metric tons for delivery in the new crop marketing year. Old crop sales were in line with trade expectations, but new crop sales fell short of trade targets. Traders said gains in corn futures limited selling interest in wheat. July hard red winter wheat was 4.5 cents lower, 4.93 1/4. July soft red firmed a penny to 5.44 3/4. July spring wheat gained 3.5 cents to 5.20 even, Chip.
You know, and I think this wheat market is still struggling with the idea that as China is looking to fill its grain reserves, that wheat isn't one of the things that they're looking to restock with U.S. supplies.
Left out of the party,
Yeah, I think that it's kind of struggling with that idea.
All right. Well, corn export sales in the weekend at April 16 totaled 727,000 metric tons for delivery in the current marketing year. That did line up with trade expectations, but Chip, new crop sales were a net cancellation of nearly 56,000 metric tons, which obviously fell short of targets. Mexico and Colombia topped the list of buyers. Speculation that China is looking to restock state-owned reserves with U.S. corn added to buying interest in futures. May corn futures a penny and 3/4 higher, 3.19 1/4. July corn firmed 1 1/4 to 3.26. December corn closed at 3.38 3/4, up 2 cents on the day. Chip,
it's a big number that if you can trust anything that is coming out of the the narrative coming out of China, it is a big number that they're looking to restock. I mean, it's north of 750 million bushels. If we could get a lot of that business, and I'm not saying all of it, but a lot of that business, it will tighten up. It won't make tight, but it will tighten up the balance sheet on corn.
Well, bean prices also found some help from talk that China could use up to 10 million metric tons of U.S. beans to rebuild state-owned reserves. Export sales in the weekend at April 16 totaled just 345,000 metric tons, with almost all of those sales for delivery in the current marketing year. That was at the bottom of trade expectations. USDA this morning also announced the sale of 272,000 metric tons of U.S. beans for delivery to China in the 2019-20 marketing year. May soybean futures 4.5 cents higher, 839 and a quarter. July beans firmed 4.25 to 846 and three quarters. Novi beans closed at 848, up a penny and a half on the day, Chip.
You know, a lot of people were saying that there's no way that China's going to be around buying beans from the U.S. until we get to late summer, early fall. The sales that we're making now are starting to add up. We should see a response in the markets.
Well, extreme uncertainty in the cattle processing segment sent front month futures limit down, but a jump in heavyweight boxed beef prices to more than 280 per hundredweight helped to limit selling in back month futures. June live cattle were a buck lower at 82.92 and a half, and August cattle were up a dime, 88.45. May feeders gained 60 cents to 117.27 and a half. And on the snout side, tightening pork supplies supported another $3.61 gain in pork product values this morning. May lean hogs were 375 higher, 50.97 and a half. July gained 317 and one half to close at 54.37 and a half, Chip.
Yeah, so I think with the May, let's find out from Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Yeah. How you doing, Oliver? Everything okay?
Everything's all right. Haven't left the house in, it seems like, 7 weeks now. So,
hang in there, man. You'll be able to get a haircut again someday soon. 370.
I'm going straight to the mullet.
Amen. Amen. You and me both. That May contract being up 375, does that mean expanded limits for the market tomorrow?
Yeah, we will have expanded limits tomorrow. So nice to see these hogs recover. It's pretty doom and gloom there just a short while ago. Still a lot of technical damage left to repair after that washout that we saw there at the end of March, but we're getting there. I think we could potentially see maybe a little continuation into the upper 50s, closer to 60, but from there I think it might be a little bit of a struggle here in the very near term.
All right. Okay. You know, it's so strange what is going on right now with the slaughter being off as much as it is and not being able to push all the hogs through the system. Yet here we are. We see some strength in this market. 282 on the heavyweight choice boxes, Oliver.
Yeah. Scream it. It's obviously the Packers are doing all right, and I know there's some ill feelings towards them, and I think we'll get around to figuring these things out. It's tough to see these cattle futures just continue to drift lower while we're seeing that box feed continue to rally pretty good. But, I know there's better times ahead.
Yeah.
Just kind of chewing through this. It's a little bit concerning is seeing that April live cattle contract limit down the last two sessions. That's a little bit of a caution flag here in the very near term, especially for that June contract. That might keep that a little bit more weighted, but if you look a little bit further, I think that's probably what's going to hold a little bit better. We've been looking at the August contract for a little bit more stable position here in the long term.
Gotcha. Oliver, take care. We'll talk to you again next week. Who knows? We might have a target date for escape from Slopeville there.
I'm breaking out.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That's Oliver Slope, Blue Line Futures. Coming up next, we're talking dairy with Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Wow. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
I actually did hit the button for the oyster sound, but as scientists well know, oysters make no sound.
Right.
So it was authentic. It just wasn't very impactful. Should really reword that one.
I understand. Yes. Yes.
Something that makes more noise.
Yeah. Right. Right. All right. Let's bring in Alyssa Badger. Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy joins us right now. Alyssa, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
Hey, good to talk to you too. Thanks for having me on. Not bad.
Good. How you holding up there in Chicago?
Oh, that's a good question. I have a stand-up desk now to avoid sitting too long. So you usually go from your desk to the couch to bed. So working on that routine.
Yeah. We're all learning a little bit differently, aren't we?
Yeah, that's for sure. I'm going to try to get a good walk in today. I feel like
there you go.
I've never experienced anything like this. So
Yeah. This morning I was talking with Iowa Ag Secretary Mike Nag, and in Iowa we've got it's a questionnaire that they are encouraging everybody to fill out and answer so that it kind of does an assessment on whether or not you should go in and have a COVID-19 test. And I told him, I said, you know, everything was going along just fine until I got to the height and weight question. And I knew that was going to be a red flag. And it was. Then it started asking questions like, are your lips blue? Are your fingertips stuff like that? And I'm like, no, what is going on?
Why
are
so
Mike said something
to get at here.
Exactly. Mike said something about, you know, at the end it said, don't take a test, but go outside and have a walk.
There you go.
Oh, too funny. Okay. I was looking back at the last time that you were on the show, Alyssa, and it was at the end of January, if I remember right. We were
gearing up to be bearish then.
Yep, absolutely. And we were looking at prices, up around $18 a hundredweight, something like that?
Oh, yeah.
And I remember you being very, very, you were putting out the caution, saying, guys, be careful here. Well, now, if we take a look at that May contract and where we closed today in the Class 3 milk futures, $10.80, and that was up 28 cents. Alyssa, are you, even at this level, are you still bearish?
Well, here's the thing. You saw a bit of support today, right? And that has a lot to do with the market anticipating bids coming in from the government. They're going to be buying some milk and cheese. Okay. So I do think nearby contract, we're finding a floor, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the futures are being honest about where we end up into Q3 and Q4. And that's, you know, if you look at 2008, 2009, we experienced something, what we call the slope of hope. And nearby contracts were selling off because of the financial crisis. And everyone thought, well, we'll still get to $15-16 by the end of the year. But those sort of prices didn't materialize until, you know, another 7-8 months after the end of the year when we started to see a recovery. So I would also, you know, implement caution there to, you know, I've talked to a producer the other day that said, well, the end of the year looks much better and that's our busy time anyway, so we'll be fine. But, you know, it's still very cautious because this recovery is going to take a long time, unfortunately.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question about that it taking time, and it's going to have to be led by, well, I don't know. Can it be led by domestic demand and a return of the restaurant and food service demand?
It couldn't have been worse timing because, you know, dairy demand's down, 10 to 15% overnight. And then we get a milk production report for March, and it's a record month. Strongest month we've ever had. You know, up 2.4% across the major producing states, and we're not even at peak yet. We usually peak in May. It's going to be, you know, hold on tight for the next couple months.
Okay, so that 10 to 15%, Is that how much of the product flows into the restaurant and food service side of things?
Yeah, I would estimate. Yeah, I'd estimate, you know, 30-40% of dairy consumption is achieved that way. And with, you know, QSR still operating at, you know, 70% capacity or something like that. But we have, you know, dine-in restaurants basically functioning 20-30% of what they usually would be, because not everyone, we're sitting at home, we're obviously going to be cooking more and trying not to eat out as much. But yeah, I mean, so how do we reduce milk production to match that kind of drop in demand? It's nearly impossible. The worst month we've ever seen is, you know, down 2.5%. That's the most we've ever seen a drop in milk production.
Right.
So when you talk something like 10-15%, that's incomprehensible, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly is. It certainly is. And it's going to take some, as you said earlier, it's going to take some time to get that demand back. When you look at the co-ops around the country, Alyssa, and it seems like they've all taken different approaches in trying to manage that supply that is coming into them. Have you seen anything that you've looked at and said, you know what, doggone it, that's a good idea, or geez, don't do that?
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to call anyone out here. I think it's, you know, somewhat positive to see these co-ops implement some base programs. And we are talking to producers that are able to respond right away by, you know, switching to twice a day milkings and changing their feed rations. So there's been some, you know, positive responses, but not everyone has those capabilities. And how many farmers do you know that want to, you know, reduce their herd size over something, a situation that's temporary? And we have no idea how temporary this is. So obviously they're going to want to be able to snap back and produce their milk to where they were before, after all this is over. I know I would.
Sure.
You know, so it's really hard to respond to those things. The USDA payments will be up to, you know, $125,000 for the smaller dairies. And, you know, that'll help cash flow for the next couple months. But, you know, yeah. I don't have an answer. I wish I did. I don't know the best solution yet.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out how long that $125,000 could feed a 2,500 cow dairy.
Right.
Yeah, it's like 10 days. It's been described as a pimple on the of an elephant as far as as the help that some of these dairies need out there. And I don't think there's any question about it. You know, one of the things, and I shouldn't have asked that question about things that co-ops are doing the way that I did, because I did put you on the spot and you were at risk of calling out a dairy, and I shouldn't have done that, or a co-op, and I shouldn't have done that. But what some of the co-ops are doing out there to participate in the relief for some of for some consumers out there, in donating to the nutrition programs, donating to food banks and stuff like that, Alyssa, boy, some of those stories are awesome, aren't they?
Oh yeah, it's great. It's great to see you know, supplying the food, local food banks, and hopefully we see more of that, because it has just been tragic to see all the headlines about the milk dumping. And listen, that happens every year. I mean, even the most recent data we have for March, this isn't the worst we've seen. You know, it was worse in 2017. There was more milk dumping. So I think the frustrating part is where demand is being placed right now and not being able to buy the milk. You know, they're limiting you to two, and then we're seeing the dumping. So it's a really frustrating thing to resolve.
But Alyssa, that doesn't fit the narrative, you know? That doesn't fit the narrative of the Today Show and Good Morning America to say that, hey, you know what, we've been here before.
Right. That's very true.
Boy, it's frustrating sometimes. Hey, real quick, I got this message from Brian Winnikins up at 1430 AM. That is WRDN up in Durand, Wisconsin. And they've been doing a lot of work up there. Today, he reports that Kurt Nelson and Al Sharon delivered more than 1,000 pounds, 1,044 pounds of butter and 1,600 and 1,600 string cheese sticks to the school district in Menominee, Wisconsin, for the meal programs. That kind of stuff is happening all the time. They're contributing more than 15,000 meals a week up there with those kinds of donations. So, okay, when we get back, what do we do about all this as a producer? We're going to talk risk management, when we might see the recovery begin. We're talking with Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy right here on AgriTalk. It's time for Pro Farmers Headline News, featuring some of the headlines ripped from Pro Farmers First Thing Today. Chinese imports of corn, wheat, sorghum, and pork up sharply from a year ago. During March, China's increased imports of those commodities, double-digit percentage gains over a year ago. Attaché calling for more than a 50% rebound in the Australian wheat production. There is mounting concern with dryness in Ukraine. The House here in the U.S. takes up the measure to replenish coronavirus aid. China is expected to boost support for agriculture. Get this, increased financial and insurance assistance will be deployed for sectors related to agriculture, according to the Chinese Communist Party. And Brazil to unveil ethanol support measures by week's end. Check out all the Pro Farmer has to offer by going to tryprofarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This season, while work for you may have changed, our season is underway. American agriculture, farms on, for our family and yours.
I thought that was you. Welcome back. Uh-huh. I'm Chip. That's Davis. We're talking to Alyssa Badger from High Ground. Uh-huh. Before we get back to that, go ahead and recap how the markets closed, Davis.
Chip, July, hard red winter wheat was 4.5 cents lower, 493 and a quarter. July, soft red firmed a penny to 544 and three quarters. May corn futures were a penny and three quarters higher at 319 and one quarter. Dees corn closed at 338 and three quarters, up 2 cents on the day. May soybean futures 4.5 cents higher, 839 and a quarter. November 2020 bean futures closed at 848. That's up a whole penny and a half on the day. On the livestock side, June live cattle a buck lower, 82.92 and a half. May feeders up 60 cents, 117.27 and one half. And May lean hogs 375 higher, 50.97 and a half. There's your quick market recap. Back to it, Chip.
All right. Thank you. Let's bring Alyssa Badger from High Ground Dairy back into the conversation. Alyssa, when we were talking about the COVID-19 earlier, you made the point that it's temporary. We just don't know how temporary it is. I'm kind of hoping or assuming that the demand destruction that we're going through in the dairy industry is going to be the same. It's temporary. We just don't know how temporary. What is it going to look like when we start to see the recovery? What are you going to watch most closely?
Well, I think first and foremost, the full recovery in food service, I don't think that happens until there's a vaccine. So not the greatest outlook there. Not to mention, we saw the jobless claims today, 26 million people out of a job. In the meantime, 10% of restaurants are going out of business. So it's going to be a slow recovery. I know I already said that. And right now, where our models are, second half of the year average in 2020, class three milk is almost right at $13. So, our best price isn't until June of next year. Obviously, if the government comes in and buys more milk or cheese than we were expecting, that's one thing. But no, I don't know. I'm not confident that they can make a big enough dent to change our model too much. Right. Yeah, but right now, November, December, $13 and $14 is the best, averaging just around $13 for the second half of the year.
$13 into $14. Okay, well, I mean, what do you do as far as number one, you do everything that you can to cut your costs as far as you can. But Alyssa, I'm not too sure if there's much meat left on those bones for most of the dairies out there.
For sure. Yeah. DRP, of course. You know, when that first rolled out, I can't stress this enough. Just if you're doing DRP, do it with a company that actually knows the market, knows dairy. You don't want to go to a guy that sells crop insurance to get your DRP program. You know, you just, because we saw guys jumping in and kind of taking the advantage, you know, it just something I'm, that frustrated me a lot.
Well, explain that further, Alyssa. Explain that further. I think, and I know I agree with you on this point, but you need to explain that further.
Oh boy, you know, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me right now. I wasn't prepared for that question.
No, that's
but,
okay.
It only makes sense for the producer at certain times. Right now, it certainly does. But also, you know, looking at selling futures, Q3, Q4 right now, because there's a very steep premium in place against the current cash market. So I would do that. Even if government buying lifts cheese prices, you know, 25 cents, that makes the deferred contracts, you know, very expensive. So,
okay.
Yeah, I would say selling futures Q3, Q4 and locking in some DRP.
Okay. All right. And when you're talking about those third and fourth quarter futures, are they north of 17? I'm sorry, I don't have it in front of me right now. Are they north of 17 bucks a hundred?
No, December's 1536, 1540 was the settlement today, but
okay.
Still think that that's overvalued.
Okay. All right. Very good. So you've got your revenue protection in place. You've got some hedges going into the fourth quarter or into the third and fourth quarters, what you're recommending. Now, I hesitate asking this question. But you have to figure out, you know, what's going to prove you wrong in a strategy like that. If you would see if you see X from food service, if you see X from restaurants, if you see X from the demand side of the market, and a price reaction in those third and fourth quarters, how quick are you to just say, okay, hey, let's let this thing run?
Yeah, well, so I think social distancing is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Way after, you know, once people are allowed to start going outside again, for lack of a better term, we're going to be a little more weary about going to bars and restaurants, and, you know, we're going to want to keep that 6-foot distance just in case. We still have no idea, you know, now we're hearing reports that a lot more people have it than we thought. Okay. Yeah. So when does that go away?
Yeah.
So I guess if people are more apt to get back into the swing of things better and faster than I'm anticipating, that's one thing that would help the market, but I just don't see it.
Okay, we've been talking so much about the domestic market here, Alyssa. What's happening around the world with dairy demand? You know, just kind of take us on a tour. Hit Asia. Hit Europe. What's happening?
So, you know, 2019 was a record year, first of all, for Asian milk powder imports, China, Southeast Asia. So it was always going to be difficult to keep up with that. And we did see China imports for Jan-Feb. We were only down about 1% under 2019. So I thought that was very positive. I heard that they're prioritizing, or they were at one point, prioritizing milk powder coming into their borders. So we saw continued strength, but that's mostly positive for the New Zealand market. And this was kind of good timing for, you know, the Oceania market, because they're going into the tail end of their milk production season and right after a drought. So they've been kind of tight on supplies, particularly food service. So kind of worked out for them, because they wouldn't have had the supplies anyway to fulfill China's expanding demand needs at the food service level.
Okay.
But that would have, if this had not happened, probably would have sent a lot more business, you know, our way. And even now, we're the cheapest price around the world in almost every market. But we're not really seeing those strong imports come into play yet, particularly from the U.S. So, New Zealand, tail end of their season, they've got a really strong premium in their price. And like I said, that has a lot to do with the fact that they're pretty tight on supplies right now. Europe, we're seeing, you know, kind of the same thing. Producers and co-ops calling for the government to step in. And they're doing everything they can, I guess. Now they're talking about, do you remember back when I was on maybe last year, the year before, all those massive skim milk powder inventories?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, now, yeah. So now Europe's talking about opening, you know, the private storage aid back up to try to temporarily take milk powder out of the market because, you know, during spring flush, obviously we're going to want to push more milk into storable goods such as butter and milk powders just store longer and better than cheese products or fluid milk.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. You know,
I got really excited there.
the whole, oh man, I guess what I'm really looking for here, Alyssa, is that ray of hope. And sometimes when it's hard to find, it's just hard to find, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I feel awful that I don't have better news. I haven't, it's been the same narrative. And it doesn't seem to be getting better, especially, you know, milk production is probably really impressive in April. We see these huge volumes out of Idaho and Texas, and it's just incredible. And it's almost impossible for us to pull back and respond that quickly.
Right, right. Yeah, I do wonder if we're not going to see some, even though the situation that we're in right now, as you correctly stated, at least I believe you correctly stated, is temporary. It makes me wonder if we're not going to see some permanent changes in cow numbers, that we might see some herd reductions out there just with guys, hands in the air, I'm done, I'm going to go do something else. And we do come out of this with lower cow numbers, huh?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. We are, you know, as of last month, we're still responding to the positive 2019. So our herd size is up almost 50,000 head in response to that.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's frustrating.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how quick that changes.
Yep. Well, you know, what we're talking about is stuff that happens when you get the flyover by the black swan. No way to predict something like this, and all you can do is the best that you can do is to adjust to the situation that you're in, and that I think is what we're doing. So, Alyssa, thanks for your time. This is not an easy time to come on this show, especially talk about the dairy industry, but you did a great job. Appreciate it, and we'll talk with you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You too. That is Alyssa Badger, High Ground Dairy. You guys, check out everything that Alyssa has to offer through highgrounddairy.com. It's pretty impressive. Just give her an opportunity there.
You can't see us, and we can't see you, so don't go changing. Listen just the way you are to AgriTalk.
John Harith, we're going to have to get him out of the basement before too long, or we may be getting a whole...
If he's going to sing like that, let's keep him in the basement.
Oh, I tell you. Welcome back. I'm Chip. Davis, I think, is with us again.
Sort of, yeah.
Okay.
I'm feeling all pixely and tingly again, so don't count on me.
I understand. And joining us is Farm Journal News Director John Harith. This morning, well, we've been trying to get our head around everything that is happening in the packing industry right now, whether it be the hog slaughterhouses or the beef packing plants, whatever. We're trying to figure it out. This morning we had a conversation with Kansas Ag Secretary Mike Beam about what is going on in the state of Kansas with the beef packing plants. Five plants in the state. It's like 23% of the nation's slaughter capacity there. And then, of course, we had Iowa Secretary Mike Nag on this morning as well, talking about the pork packing plants here in the state of Iowa. We've spent a lot of time talking about the workers, and we previewed the fact that
United Food and Commercial Workers Union.
Thank you. Then the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, International Union, represents 1.3 million workers in food and retail. They hosted a press conference or a press call this afternoon at 1:30. John, you sat in on it. One of the things that they said that they were going to do was update on the number of infected workers and so on. Was there anything there that was real shocking or eye-opening?
No, the numbers track along with what we've been hearing. Their numbers were only on their union lines. They did not include the non-union lines. So actually, the actual number is higher than what they reported. And I apologize, I don't have that right in front of me at the moment.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, no worries. Were there any demands that were issued?
Yeah, they started off with a long list of things they would like to see. The biggest issue for them was pushing back against USDA allowing the lines to speed up, allowing exemptions to those line speeds for inspectors and poultry in particular. But also other lines as well. There apparently been a number of exemptions. In fact, they said that there have been more exemptions issued in the last month than there were in all of 2019. They say that then requires more workers on the line, which requires those workers to be in closer proximity, which, of course, then promotes the spread of COVID-19. So that and companies providing proper PPE were the two biggest things for them. They had some other issues on that list, but those were the two biggest. By far, the one that they kept coming back to was that line speed issue.
Okay. All right. Yeah, and I'm glad that you mentioned the poultry side of that, because, boy, in some of the numbers that are out there on how quickly those lines are moving, yeah. I mean, even if conditions are perfect, there's some difficulty keeping up with what's happening there. They also had workers from the meat packing plants on the call. What was the attitude? What did you learn from some of their comments?
And that was probably my biggest surprise. They had workers from multiple plants from various parts of the country, really all across the country. And while there were some concerns expressed about availability of PPE, by and large, the workers were very positive about how these packing plants have responded. Almost all of them talked about plexiglass shields being put up, more spacing being done. In a lot of cases, there was PPE provided. In some cases, there wasn't, and that was highlighted when that wasn't the case. That there were pay incentives added for these workers. So while there were concerns expressed, the overall vibe I got was very positive about the packers and how they're responding to this for their employees.
Man, that's encouraging, John.
That is.
It's hard to know who to trust when you start getting reports from inside the plants. But if we've got workers from those plants, those union workers saying, you know what? Guys, they're trying. They have done things to make the workplace safer for us. I hope that message gets out to mainstream media, because they're ready. You can just see it building, John, in among the mainstream media, where they're ready to come out and do what they can to slaughter the packers.
Indeed, and I think Mike Nag this morning in your interview with him, the Iowa Ag Secretary, really hit on something here that I hadn't thought about as extensively as he obviously has, and that is that this does become a food security issue. When we've thought about food security before, it's always about biosecurity, and is somebody going to try to introduce something to reduce trust in the food supply in the U.S.? This is not something I don't think that agriculture has been focused on, in that there is another security issue, and that is if we have something like COVID-19 arrive on the scene, how do we secure our ability to produce a healthy, safe, and cheap food supply in the U.S.?
Right. Yeah, this is it is an interesting time that we are in, and the conversation that we had with Dr. Dermot Hayes from Iowa State University yesterday, one of the questions that we asked him is how much more mechanization could come into the processing plants out there. And he talked about that carcass being a biological item. You know, it's not a cookie cutter. It's a hog carcass that we're talking about. And while there has been some incredible improvement on the robotics and on the mechanization, the most advanced plant in the world still takes 1,000 employees to run.
Yep.
And I think that tells a lot. That's why we've got to watch out and make sure that we are doing everything that we can to keep those workers confident that they can come to work and be safe when they're there. And you got to provide the financial incentive to do it as well. John, thank you for the report. Appreciate it. For John, for Davis, for producer Joe Stackler, thank you for listening. Tomorrow morning, we got the free-for-all. Tomorrow afternoon, Brian Doherty from Stuart Peterson TFM.